Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.20. This is the moment at which you regret how visual our podcast is, because neither of us is wearing any pants.
There it is.
That's the first time I've ever opened a bottle of champagne on a podcast.
Yes, that is a first.
Although they did do this last year.
They did. We just missed that opportunity, apparently.
We did.
But we're a little better prepared this year, I guess.
Well, also, we're recording this at like 8 p.m., so it's not insane to drink.
Yeah, no, it seems like a reasonable thing to do at the moment, given what just went down.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, and it's, I think, 8 conference rooms, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Eco-Intelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grant.
So Michigan defeats Purdue 75-66.
And that score is a lie.
It's not even that close.
No.
Not even really close to that.
They're up 18 partway through the second half.
And then, they kind of go into clock kill mode, as they should have. But KenPom time was not friendly to the Wolverines.
No, it dragged that margin back quite a bit.
In a game they otherwise dominated.
Absolutely. I mean, Purdue didn't have a lead after the first 3 minutes.
And they dominated it despite the fact, I mean, they shot fairly well from three-point range, but they shot 35% from three-point range.
And in the first half, they were 3-for-11 on
wide open
gaping
looks.
Open looks so open that despite the fact that Michigan went 3-for-11, Matt Painter completely changed his approach to guarding ball screens in the second half.
Yeah.
And that was the right decision, even though they got bombed.
And like Painter's like, all right, we're not going to do the switch everything thing because I'm sure they've figured that out. And then you realize why they did the switch everything.
Yeah, because otherwise it's a parade of wide open threes.
And Michigan does an extraordinary job of shutting down Purdue's insane three-point shooting.
Yes, I mean, Purdue is the best three-point shooting team in the country heading into this game. And then Michigan...
In the country.
And just totally locked down the perimeter. They go 4-for-17. A lot of those are late chucks towards the end of the game. So in terms of closing down the volume, Michigan did a great job of that.
Just 17 looks from three. They take 38 twos.
Yeah.
And that's...
In a game where they're losing for almost the entire duration and losing by a lot for most of the second half. And Xavier Simpson and Rock combined to do an absolutely stellar job on Carson Edwards, who is by far the most dangerous shot creator and the guy that if they were going to come back in the second half, it was going to have to be on him.
12 points on 18 shot equivalents.
Yes.
With two
turnovers.
To the dude that we put on the All Big Ten first team, and it wasn't even close. Like,
yeah, I mean, Edwards has been doing that to everybody lately at 20 or more points, and I believe 5 of his last 7 heading into this one, including a 43-point game scattered in there. Like, the guy is really, really good. And I know there was a lot of dead leg talk on the broadcast, but man, that was Michigan's defense.
Well, I kind of bought the dead leg talk for both teams because, like...
A little bit, sure.
I felt like both of those teams were missing shots they would otherwise make. But, I mean, Michigan goes inside and they shoot 62% from two against freaking Purdue.
Purdue blocks a shot in this game. A single shot.
Including the Xavier Simpson... layup. It's not a layup if it goes off the very top of the backboard and keeps going up.
I mean,
that's not a layup.
It's a circus, is what it is. And the Xavier Simpson circus is a fun deal right now.
Well, he's listed at 6'0",
and that is incredibly generous.
And that's a lie. And he's shooting 57% from two.
Yes.
And he, none of those are jumpers.
No.
He literally hasn't hit a jumper all year.
No.
So the guy who's the smallest guy on the court is going up at Isaac Haas and flipping it in the basket. And I'm like, all right.
Like, that's a good shot.
Like, you, like we had a This Week's Obsession earlier in the year, and we were talking about, like, what do we need to do? Like, who do we need to break out?
And I was like, I want Wagner, because I just don't see how Xavier Simpson is going to be anything more than a 16% usage guy for the duration of his career. And Ace was like, you stupid. And you were right.
I like to think my argument was a little stronger than that. This is high school Xavier Simpson.
Sure.
I mean, you know, against taller people, it's more impressive now.
Yeah.
This is the dude that was in there in high school, and it took him a little while to figure it out. But John Beilein also, you know, does some wonders with the shot. He's even, I mean, I think you pointed out in the Slack chat that Simpson's now making about 2/3 of his three free throws since he's changed up his routine.
Well,
that may have dropped off at the end of this game.
He was 1 of 5 in this one, so he's up to like 19 for 31, which is still a 15 point or so improvement.
It does seem like it's helping him keep his elbow in, which was kind of the main problem, as he was letting that get out wide. And then
it's a free throw. I just don't understand why it's just like, I don't put my elbow. I don't understand.
It's tough, man. When stuff gets ingrained in you from childhood, you've shot thousands of those, it can get difficult. But anyway, he
hasn't shot thousands of those.
He was you know.
It's not something that was a
dozens,
part of his repertoire.
Dozens.
I'm just spitballing.
But
Xavier Simpson played on some ugly hoops, I think. No, because like, You play on this ugly hoop, so like, how do you play basketball?
You get to the bucket.
Right, and then you finish in every imaginable way, because sometimes the hoop's upside down. But then you don't really practice your free throws.
No.
No.
No, not so much.
Although his free throw form was better than Noel Eastern's.
Wow. We recruited that guy, too. Like a giant combo point guard. I mean, he's got an interesting game, but that shot is broken. I'm okay with him being on Purdue.
Well, I think he's, I don't know.
He's interesting on Purdue.
He's really interesting, yeah.
Yeah. But he's not a great Beilein fit, because that shot is, oof.
No. And then is he the MVP of this game? Is John Teste?
Big Nasty? I mean,
I don't think he is, because a lot of his points were set up by Simpson.
Yeah. I agree with you. But he does do a better job on Haas when he comes in. In fact, kind of frustrates him to the point where Purdue puts in harms instead.
Yeah. Knocks down some jumpers.
He's starting to finish with authority, which was something that we were looking for.
He put Haas on a poster.
And then in the second half. I was talking about in the first half, because he had a nice like dunk finish from far away off a slip screen. And then he murdered Isaac Haas.
Which is completely unfair to Haas, because
Haas was standing like behind the basket and then stepping out when that happened. Like, but no, you're underneath the basket when that happens. Those are the rules.
Yeah, you can put it on a poster. Sorry, buddy.
You're in the picture, dude.
He has 30% usage in this game.
I mean, this is the weirdest dang John Beilein team ever, so why not?
Yeah.
Why not? The backup center, who's 7-1. 260 gets 30% usage in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah. And so here we are. It's
pretty cool.
It's March. Michigan has rolled off 4 straight wins in the Big Ten tournament for the second consecutive year. Since that's never been done before. I can confidently say, because there's
no the other two back-to-back champions were
not coming from
one or two seeds.
So this is now, and because of the way the Big Ten schedule was set up, I think this is the more meaningful title. Like, Michigan beat Michigan State, they beat Purdue. Ohio State didn't make it through Penn State, and it's at a neutral court. And you know, Michigan State didn't play anybody on the road in this conference.
No, they really didn't. And you know, it's hard to argue when Michigan beats them twice in a season without playing him at home.
With
two double-digit wins.
Two double-digit wins. It's like, easy.
And
it's stupid. It's easy.
Yeah. And that, you know, I you can try to make an argument for Purdue, but I consider that first game a total ref jobbing. I mean, it was close.
Well,
but it was a bit of a ref jobbing.
Michigan was in position to take a final shot to win or go to overtime. It wasn't like
They did not have the game in their hands then.
Right. Yeah. Like I'm very much upset about that particular review, of course, but Michigan was like maybe 60% to win. They were 80%.
But I would still say, you know, anybody looking at the Big Ten right now, which is the better team between Michigan and Purdue? We just saw it.
Yeah, I mean,
and Michigan beat Ohio State the last time they played. Yep. I mean, Michigan's a better team than Ohio State.
And then the other two games required Purdue to just shoot absolute lights out from the floor.
Yeah.
And from three, like they shot 57% in a 1-point victory in the game at Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they had the ludicrous speed game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the bracket, but that's another segment.
That is another segment.
This segment is just talking about this particular game and how good it was and how I liked it. Yeah.
I mean, Isaac Haas dropped 23 points, and it was like, this is great. Like, keep doing it. I mean, you know, a little bit early on, I was like, okay, maybe a little bit more on the defense, but, you know.
But they kept taking him out. He only had, like, 23 minutes in this game. I'm like.
Yeah, Painter's rotations were a little interesting.
I know he's enormous and probably gets tired. I just was a little bit surprised that they didn't keep doing that.
I mean, I got it in the second half when Michigan was just starting to take him off the dribble every time he switched onto a guard.
Yeah.
In the first half when they weren't playing it that way and he was seemingly getting all of his rebounds if he missed the shot, then that seemed a little bit strange. But Michigan kind of manages to take him out of his game a little bit in the second half. I mean, he only finishes with two offensive rebounds, but he only pulls down three in the entire second half. That's a win for Michigan.
Well, and the other thing is that Michigan went 27, 28 minutes in this game without a turnover.
Yes.
Which is
absurd. I was following Hammer and Rails, the SB Nation Purdue site, and their like celebratory tweet when Michigan finally turned the ball over was like, I just love watching opposing fans like get the Michigan experience.
It was and like they had another one kind of shortly after, and then they had, like, I think a couple towards the end of the game, and they finished with five.
Yes.
Five turnovers against Purdue, which has an excellent, excellent defense.
18 assists.
It hasn't been that pretty since, you know, the Stauskas left. They've had, you know, they had a really good team last year, but they didn't have a pretty team. And this game
got a little pretty towards the end.
You know, a little bit here and there, but like nothing like we had
the like pick and pop orchestra with Walton and Wagner.
Yeah, sure, like the Louisville game last year was,
and the Oklahoma State game was just a fireworks show.
It's true, but like I didn't think we would get there with like Xavier Simpson and Charles Matthews.
No, not at all. I mean, to see it hit this point is. I mean, and like, I'm like constantly telling myself to never underestimate John Beilein, and this finish is still just blowing me away.
It's hard to like be like, okay, I'm going to be a rational person about this, and the rational thing to do is be a stupid ass fanboy.
Yep, that's where it is in Michigan. It's just, and for some reason, most of our stupid ass fanboys do not do this. I mean,
no,
Michigan basketball Twitter. We're awesome.
Like the rational take about John Beilein is he's wonderful and I love him.
Yeah, that's,
I love him more than I love everything.
It's so beautiful.
Except my son.
I have no children. I don't care.
So, let's take a break, come back, and we're going to talk about the other three games with a special focus on one of those games, which would be, of course, Iowa.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hey, Brian, I want you to know something. Icicles are pretty.
They're pretty wasteful. If you have icicles, chances are you have cold rooms. Here's what you need to do. You need to call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
With OG at a Yankee game. That made the Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee can. You should know I bleed blue, but I ain't a crypto. But I got a gang and walking with my click though. Welcome to the
So there's a lot to get through when you play four games in 4 days and win all of them. Michigan versus Iowa was a frustrating game, largely because Michigan couldn't hit the broadside of a barn for three.
Yeah, you know, it was a kind of a classic first game in a unfamiliar arena performance
right,
for
like,
Michigan.
Duncan is the only player on the team to hit even one three-pointer. Jordan Poole, like, would probably be better served throwing the ball at the basket like he's playing soccer.
And he's baseball, any other sport, really. High a lie.
Try to, like, bounce it off the floor and into the net. He went from the most dangerous freshman in the league to the ugliest bricklayer.
One to his own team. Yeah. It was not great.
And but Michigan consistently gets it inside on Iowa. They shoot 58% from two. Mm-hmm. They get to the line a ton,
and they make a number of them.
they make some of those, but Iowa manages to kick it to overtime because Bohannon hits a couple of threes. This is another game in which Michigan, until Bohannon was just taking desperation shots, he hit two of, was just completely shutting off the outside.
Yeah, Bohannon, who's a great off-the-bounce three-point shooter, was 1-for-9 from the arc before those two late ones.
Yeah. And then kind of the other story that leapt out was the atrocious refereeing in this game.
It wasn't great.
So Mo and Xavier both had, not Xavier, Mar both have two fouls coming out of halftime, and then within 2 minutes of each other, they both get blocking fouls by getting plowed in the chest by their opponents.
Yeah,
as on-ball defenders.
No, it was like the only game where Beeline's auto bench perfectly made sense with the way they were calling it.
Yes,
because they were calling. I mean, it wasn't particularly consistent. It totally changed from the first half to the second half. But once they started calling the second half the way they did, they couldn't keep those guys on the floor.
No, it was just they had the review that took forever.
I don't even remember what it was about.
There was like a flagrant review that was like completely ludicrous that they spent 7 minutes on. It was just very, very frustrating and just a complete
It was a ref show.
It was a ref show. That's definitely the way to put it. But Michigan, again, kind of puts the brakes on a really good offense. They hold Iowa under a point per possession.
Yes.
And that's the good part of Iowa, of course.
Yeah.
So that was the Iowa game. The Nebraska game was just kind of a hand blasting from the drop.
Yes.
Where, you know, Michigan kind of jumps out to a 6-7 point lead, and they maintain that. They push it out to 10 by halftime, and it feels like it's more the whole game. Like, I think the announcers were actually picking up on this, where it was like Nebraska was down 14 and then they'd get a couple bucks and it'd be 10 and be like, I know this game feels like a complete and total blowout, but it's only 10 points.
Yeah.
And Michigan had, there was one push, I think, when they got it down to 7, and then Michigan blows the doors off. Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman goes 5 of 5 from 3.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good. And the team almost gets to 50% there. Mo has a big game. You know, you see Duncan come off the bench and also hit a bunch of threes. And just a game where Nebraska goes 1 for 20 at one point.
Yeah, that was that stretch.
And it wasn't even that surprising because they couldn't get a good shot to save their lives.
No, I mean, they it was not a great matchup for them, I don't think, on offense.
I mean,
Michigan made it that way, but they were just trying to bully their way into the paint for the most part because they couldn't get open threes, and they don't have mid-range shooters.
And then Glenn Watson's trying to do his Carson Edwards impression, which is...
And he's not
He's like a 38-28 shooter. And
yeah.
So he hits a couple, but it's just like, that's not sustainable.
Sure.
And, I mean, that's the story of this tournament, is that Michigan was dominant defensively against 4 excellent offensive teams.
Yes.
Like, Iowa's not very good.
Iowa's not a good team. Defense. They have a good offense.
They have a very good offense. Nebraska has a good offense, and then Purdue and Michigan State are top 10.
Yeah.
And in each of these games, Michigan frustrates the opponent to the point where they're taking contested long twos for a large chunk of their shots.
Yeah, Michigan took multiple teams out of what they try to do.
Like, Miles Bridges is trying to be Rip Hamilton, and that's not working.
No.
And Carson Edwards is flinging up terrible shots because he can't get anything out. And James Palmer is doing the same thing. Glenn Watson thinks that the best option for his team is just to hurl it at the basket off the dribble, and he might be right. I mean, the announcers are just start talking about how this is like an incredible defensive team, and it is.
Yeah, they're.
How did that happen?
They're now ranked above the next opponent we will be talking about here.
The one thing that kind of bugged me about the Nebraska game is that, you know, Nebraska's defense is based on switching everything because they have Isaiah Roby, and Isaiah Roby can make that work. So you'd get like Marr switched onto Roby or Simpson switched onto Roby, and they would go attack Roby, and it would go terribly.
It would not go well.
I mean,
and they did
he's
that
an
more,
incredible defensive player.
They did that more than they needed to.
I mean, attack anyone else on that team. Like, there's other mismatches out there if Roby's on a point guard.
Yeah. I get the inclination if you're Rock to see a 6'8 guy and want to
sure,
take him off
yeah,
the dribble,
yeah.
But you know,
the fourth
not
time.
That guy's a 6'8 guy.
God,
he's good.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
he had 5 blocks. It was just yeah.
Yeah, he's like
don't drive it at that dude.
That was the only thing that was kind of, the other thing was like, so Poole also has a bad game. He can't hit a shot. And then his defense is clearly below that of Charles Matthews on Palmer. So there's like kind of a moment in there where Nebraska's making their push and Poole's missing shots and his guy is getting to the rim for the only easy buckets I think Michigan gave up all day.
Yeah.
And if he's not hitting shots, then you got to go with Matthews because Matthews is a better defensive player at this juncture. So hopefully that won't be the case in the tournament. Hopefully.
Yeah, it'd be very nice if Jordan Poole's shot
yeah,
came I mean, back. He's got some time to work on it.
He did have a really nice assist at a critical juncture where he drove the lane and he kicked out to Marr. So that's not...
Yeah, his offensive instincts are still quite good.
Yes.
Like I was not, for the most part, upset with his shot selection.
No.
There were a couple forced ones this tournament, but nothing
a
too
little
bad.
Bit, yeah.
But his ability to break down the defense and find the open guy still looks quite good. He yeah. does have defensive issues. But I think, you know, if his shot comes back, he's a plus player in the tournament.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then the piece de resistance. The victory over Michigan State, that was easier than the one at Breslin somehow.
Yep.
Despite the fact that Michigan couldn't hit a three for the entire first half, Mo has a ton of open looks and just bricks all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan races out to a 13-4 lead in the first 3 minutes, and then they score 13 points the rest of the half. And you're just like, on the one hand, please make a shot, any shot. On the other hand, they get out of that half down 3 points.
Yeah. It feels like they're both very fortunate to be in it, and also maybe unlucky that they came out so dang flat and were missing that many shots.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, Nick Ward getting a tech early, and it's all like burly up and we're tougher than you.
I mean, you've got Charles Matthews just laughing right in his face after Ward does the kind of gets fouled and then takes down Teske with
him. Well, he flexed on him. Like, Ward's on the ground and Matthews is still standing up when he flexed on him. He's like, ugh. And Ward gets up and they're obviously exchanging recipes. And must have got a good one from Matthews because he enjoyed that moment.
He did. The refs are like, your recipe's too good. You're going to need to go over by the bench for a while.
And like, Michigan State is like so hyped up and so into this game because it feels like a turning point in this rivalry. If you get swept by Michigan, you're 9-7 against Beilein since he got his program put together, and three of those losses are without Caris LeVert. And you got run off your floor. You didn't run off the floor, but you lost very solidly at your home court. This is your opportunity for revenge, and this is the last time that you're going to have a non-FBI encumbered program, God willing. It felt like they had to go and they had to go get it. And Michigan's defense did not let them build any kind of lead in the first half. They started taking a bunch of tough shots. Winston couldn't get anything up.
Smothered again.
Couldn't get anything up. And they're taking Jaren Jackson off the floor for God knows what reason.
You got to get Gavin Schilling out there, man.
Kenny Goins and Schilling have 23 minutes in this game, and Jaren Jackson has 24 minutes in this game. And like, why would you, if you're Jaren Jackson, why did you pick this stupid program that's going to put you on the bench in a critical game against Michigan
to
play a 6 foot six walk-on?
If he's in the SEC, he's getting 35 minutes a game or however many minutes he gets until he fouls out.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't even in foul trouble in this game. He got like a stupid foul early. But like, he only picks up his fourth real late when there's an intentional foul time. Yeah. So I have no idea. Like, he gets like,
I mean, he missed some 3-point shots, but I thought he had some bad long twos, but his 3-point looks were good.
Yeah, he took good shots.
I was worried about those until they didn't go in.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a good shooter.
Michigan had a little bit of fortune in the first half.
And
I thought.
And Jaren Jackson does not record a block in this game.
No.
Michigan State records one block as a team. Michigan goes back-to-back Michigan State and Purdue and gets blocked twice in two games with Xavier frickin' Simpson going into the lane with great frequency. I mean, it's crazy. It's the second straight year difficult to explain. Other than that, Beilein is a frickin' wizard.
Yeah, and then you have Langford and Bridges just taking terrible shots, just...
Yeah, I mean, you could see the, let's just call it the gap in coaching quality in this game.
I mean, they have...
Because Michigan is running their stuff.
And they have a couple of moments late where, like, okay, we're going to put Bridges in the post and post him up against Duncan, and they get a couple easy buckets off that, and you're like, welcome to 3 years ago and Duncan Robinson. Like, this is what everybody...
Yeah, that's what people have been doing for years.
Now, he's become an adequate post defender, but like...
But Miles Bridges is a very good... post score.
And if you're an adequate post defender and you can't get anything else on the board, like, go at it, man. But they just, I don't know. And then they start screaming at each other and there's like this panic. And you can see it in the substitutions. You can see it in the way that they're approaching the game. And Michigan kind of runs out to like a 7-8 point lead and you can just see them like they're done.
No, they talked about wanting that game, and then they got into that game and got hit in the mouth, and they decided they did not want that game anymore. No. Xavier Simpson pretty much said as much after the game. He was a little more diplomatic about it, but...
Well, and then after the game, Michigan is talking, because...
And also during the game, which
But, I mean, that's all they've... Like these guys
become like a savage trash talking team. It's amazing.
And these guys are like beefing up on you after you beat them in Breslin, and like Bridges is like, these guys aren't tough, and I'm like, buddy,
Try winning a game against
like,
us.
Like, seriously. Try doing anything other than jacking up an 18-footer, calling someone else soft.
Pay $40 and get back in the game after you foul out.
Just because you put on some football pads and go play Joust with the American Gladiators doesn't mean you can go basketball. I want to talk about the greatest tweet in the history of tweets.
I want to hear it.
And that is Colin TJ saying that Matt McQuaid is a McPoyle, which is true. And it's been killing me. It's been killing me for years that I couldn't, like what is this guy?
Not,
what is
not
this,
being able to place it.
What is this guy's like, face? And, like, how is it doing this to me? And what is going on?
Because I kind of had it as, like, inbred Spike Albrecht, but.
Which is kind of McPoyle,
which
right?
Which is pretty McPoyle-like. But yeah, I mean, you know, saying his parents were McPoyles just
which would also make him a McPoyle.
Yes,
a
tip of the cap to Colin for that one. That killed me.
And then, of course, the second greatest tweet of all time was Ben Mathis Lilly declaring that Tom Izzo no longer wants to talk about basketball at press conferences either.
He's running out of things. He is running out of things.
Answering a lot of weird questions. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful.
God, it's so good that this sweep happened this year.
Yeah, because this isn't even like, I mean, it obviously is now, but it wasn't like going into this year. I'm just like, all right, let's make the tournament, and then like the cavalry will show up next year.
Yeah, this was a kind of, you know, playing with house money here as long as they got in.
Right.
And now they've got an outside shot at a 2 seed. So that's cool. And yeah, they swept, like, what Tom Izzo had said heading into the season was one of his best Michigan State teams, possibly the best that he's had. Jaren Jackson will never beat Michigan.
Well.
Unless some crazy stuff happens in the tournament. I mean, but Jaren Jackson.
Bridges was coming back. But he did. And much the woe for us.
Yeah, no,
oh, we who
right.
have experienced the wrath. Man. We should also shout out Simpson and Charles Matthews for going 4 of 6 and 6 of 8 from the free throw line in this
Indeed.
Game.
That made Which, the ending a lot more comfortable than it could have been.
Yes.
Because Izzo was going to drag that out forever.
I was, oh, God. If they had missed like a couple more of those, I would have been feeling very poor about myself.
Yeah, I do think this
kind of like free throw thing is obscuring how Michigan is playing in some of these games. Because, you know, when you start the free throw thing...
It drags the offensive efficiency back down when you're doing it
right, and Michigan
long before the end of the game.
And Beilein's approach when he's got like a 10-point lead with 4 minutes left is, I'm just going to take the air out of the ball and we're just going to get out of here with a dub. So,
is great for winning and not great for KenPom.
Right. Yeah. So in the non-KenPom sections of these games, Michigan is like emphatically beating these teams. I know I'm saying I this is not just something I'm saying because I'm watching a team that can't make a freaking free throw, but. They really need to change the way that the end of basketball games work. And the way they should do it is if you get fouled, you have the option of taking the shots or taking a shot clock violation with the corresponding runoff. So if there's 18 seconds on the shot clock, you can just run 18 seconds off the clock and then the other team gets the ball.
See, I think the modified way to do it is to just give them the option of taking possession back, maybe knock some seconds off, maybe take it down to 20 instead of 30 on the shot clock. And at least give a team a chance to defend.
I kind of think.
And also give the offense a chance to, you know, punish you for fouling them intentionally.
Yeah, I think the intentional, but you want to. It's I like the icing rule in hockey because once they took the change out of it, that was like the minimum punishment necessary to kind of prevent that from happening. So like the 30 seconds and then, or whatever it is, and you get the. It's like you just got to hold the ball, and the shot clock expires. I don't think that comes into effect. Too much, but it also takes away this stupid way to end a basketball game, where
it's just a parade of fouls.
Right, it's, you know, it never changes the outcome of a game. I mean, not never. God bless Trey Burke, but it's very rare. Anyway,
beating State's fun. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a break and talk about the future. Also, I'm gonna have some of this. Prosecco. I lied. It's not champagne.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 116-1358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
I sip the Don P, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin, the whole of mic I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smooth shit that murderers move with. The thief's theme, the play me at night, they won't act right. The fiend of hip hop has got me stuck like a crack pipe. The mind activation.
So the recent past is in the past.
Sure is.
And now we look to the future, which should see Michigan get a protected seed now, especially because the Big Ten tournament now happens a week ahead of time, or did this year, so Michigan's going to get full credit for its wins, which is kind of the one upside of the stupid compressed schedule.
The stupid schedule.
I guess also Isaiah Livers has another week to recoup that ankle.
But, yes, it would be nice if he was fully healthy.
So on Bart Torvik's site, his T-Ranketology has Michigan as the top three seed, which is behind Purdue, but critically ahead of Michigan State. So now the committee has a really tough decision about where to put those three Big Ten teams, because there's two spots in Detroit. And I think Michigan gets one now, because even if they're kind of – cutting hairs between Michigan and Purdue, like Purdue doesn't really care if they're in Detroit, you know, like if they're in Pittsburgh or if they're in Nashville, it's pretty much the same thing to them. It's a little bit shorter of a drive. It's a little bit shorter of a flight. It matters a great deal to Michigan if they're in Detroit. And now that they have the luxury of a protected seed, you know, I think the committee will put Michigan in Detroit, even if they don't rank them over Michigan State.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, especially since, you know, Michigan sweeps Michigan State this year. It'd be weird for them to reward State with the home game.
Well, I mean, the one thing that keeps coming up, and I cannot deny, is that the nonsense seedings from last year's Big Ten.
It's the only thing that gives me pause about thinking that Michigan is a deadlock for a three seed with a chance at a two.
Well, and then other stuff, like Jerry Palm still had us as a five going into the game today.
That's just dumb.
But we don't know if it's Jerry Palm being dumb or if
Jerry Palm knowing how the committee is going to be dumb this year.
Right, like if he's correctly modeling that the committee is dumb. So he's not.
I mean, Palm tends to finish pretty low on the bracket matrix.
He does. And
there
he,
is that.
He's
and he can correct late.
And he often uses the non-conference strength of schedule metric that's on the team sheets.
Yes.
To justify the things he says.
And that's something that people have said they're not going to look at.
And the committee head this year.
Because it's a garbage stat.
It's basically said it's a garbage stat. He told Omaha.com it's garbage, and I wish it was not on the sheets at all. Which is good news for Michigan, because their number on that is bad because of
it's
the way they
bad.
Schedule.
Yeah.
But Michigan, I had a post earlier this year where Michigan had a quadrant one problem. Well, they emphatically solved that quadrant run problem by beating Maryland, which is a Q1, by beating Ohio State, which is a Q1.
Penn State
is right on the edge right now. I think they're literally 75th. So they could bounce up and down from 1 to 2 depending on what the other teams do the rest of this week.
For now, it's holding as a quadrant run one. Let's hope it.
Let's hope it holds.
Let's hope it holds.
And then you get is Nebraska Q1 on a neutral site?
And no, that was a quadrant two.
All right. But then Purdue and Michigan State are both obvious quadrant one wins.
Yes.
And hopefully, you're going to look at the degree of difficulty for that quadrant, which includes a lot of road games at top 10 teams and not a lot of home games.
Yeah, because Michigan really did. I mean, there's a lot that falls into that quadrant one bucket, as you can probably guess by the number of teams we just mentioned. Yeah. But Michigan really did have more of the – if you split quadrant one in half – Michigan had more of the upper half quadrant one wins most teams.
So hopefully that'll override the fact that Michigan State has just four losses on the season. Michigan.
Two of them to Michigan.
Two of them to Michigan. They're not going to look at head-to-head, though, are they?
I mean, when you blind resume those two teams, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Because when you blind resume those two teams, Michigan has the edge in quality wins.
By a lot.
By a significant margin. So even with Michigan State's advantage and some of the efficiency stuff and then just the win-loss record in total, I mean, don't you have to kind of look at head-to-head there when you're trying to put those two teams relative to each other? Especially with Michigan getting them at their place and on a neutral court by double digits.
Like they're...
Each time.
Like if you're talking about like these two teams are right next to each other on the S-curve, okay.
Well, they're going to be close.
They are going to
They're going to be really close. And I think at that point, if you'd flip them if they were next to each other, do you not flip them if they're two spots away? I mean, where do you draw that line?
And they are very close.
So, I don't know. I'm biased. I'd put Michigan above Michigan State.
I mean, but there are even some of the bad metrics that the NCAA uses, Michigan now has the advantage. They're ahead of Michigan State in RPI.
Yeah. Now, the one that's kind of dragging Michigan down right now is KPI, and they hate the Big Ten in general. And I also haven't checked that since the title game, so that might actually bounce up.
What is
bit.
KPI?
It's the one where nobody really knows the formula or why it's included.
It has nothing to do with KenPom.
No. No, it's a completely different one.
Okay.
And it might be the dumbest of all of them. I don't know. it spits out some wonky stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, Michigan was 35th heading into the Big Ten semifinal.
What?
Yeah. That, and then jumped up to 23rd after beating State, but still, come on.
Seriously.
You gotta be kidding me.
Well, I mean, it's we'll see. I don't know what the outcome is, but the other thing that Michigan has to dodge if they're going to get to Detroit is Xavier's a one seed probably, and you have Cincinnati also competing there. Those teams are both in Cincinnati, so they're closer to Nashville. But, I mean,
hopefully you split those one and one.
But then you got Purdue.
And then you got Purdue and Michigan State to worry about. It
feels like there's one or two more teams than spots.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So maybe hope for Xavier to go down in the conference tournament earlier than planned.
No, and that's not going to bump them off the line, though. I mean, what you want is Xavier in your bracket.
That's true.
Because then you're going to go, if you get them as a one seed, then you're going to be favored in that game.
Yeah, that
in
is
services.
That's a better one seed to hit than like Villanova
ever.
Or
that's the best one seed. That's the best one seed that you could ever hit. Because they're like 15th in KenPom.
Yeah,
which is not something that usually happens.
No.
Oh man, this is that's weird. I'm like, oh, we can make a Final Four run this year.
Yeah, it's. I mean.
Like, up until even like 3 weeks ago, I'm like, this gear is pretty good, but what about next year? And now I'm like, what about
the mailbag I did heading into the Big Ten tournament? Half the questions I got were about next year.
I mean, you know,
and I didn't post any of them because we still have to do some things first.
Yeah.
I was kind of expecting to run a bunch of those this week, and now it's like, now we got to keep focusing on this team because, yeah, man, it's, I mean, you look at the teams above them, there isn't really anyone that's like, I'm terrified. Villanova a little bit. Villanova scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. Like North Carolina, we it was a long time ago against
UNC,
a different kind of team.
And at their place.
But they really beat us up on the offensive boards.
They sure did. And but that's something Michigan has been remarkably good at since
I know,
then.
But I also feel like maybe that they would just overwhelm that strength of Michigan, and then you're looking at a bad matchup.
That's true.
But yeah, anybody else, I'm like, you know, whatever.
If they get Cincy or Xavier.
We just put the Spurs to a couple of 2/3 seeds. Like, can't be anybody too scary out there, he said, amazed at himself.
Yeah, it's running out of words to describe it.
Yeah, you just did. You're like, I was supposed to say something, but yeah. I lost. Why don't you just say, you're done, Brian, with the Simpson take. That's going to be like evergreen. You're going to bring
it up. I mean, I have brought that up in the Slack chat this week.
You know, did.
I did post a block quote. I left out the one where the part where you where you addressed me directly on Twitter.
Well, shut up.
But I did include the link.
I mean, I
didn't see it coming like this.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
a little bit hypocritical here. And it's not like Mo Wagner getting pretty good has been a bad thing.
No, it has not been a bad thing.
Thank you.
But, you know, Z is the engine of this team right now. It's pretty wild.
It is wild.
On both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
And
I mean, would you trade a point guard in the Big Ten for him at both ends of the floor? Carson Edwards, probably, even though he just had a terrible game, but probably Carson Edwards.
I would absolutely take Carson Edwards if you're going to have him run the one, but other
like
than
Winston?
That...
Winston? I don't know.
I mean, we've seen that twice.
We've seen it twice. It didn't go good for Winston.
And then, I mean, I wouldn't take Cowan over him. Tony Carr is the only other guy who's in the discussion. And Carr does not finish at the basket.
No, he doesn't.
He'd be fun in Beilein's offense because you can shoot threes off the bounce.
Yeah, there's
6'5", so he'd be pretty good defense.
There is definitely like a Beilein curve that we need to think about when we talk about these things. Like, what does Josh Langford look like if he came to Michigan?
A lot better than what
not
this,
that.
This is.
Not that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Simpson is playing as well as any point guard in the Big Ten right now, and that is pretty remarkable.
That's mind-blowing.
He lost his starting job to a dude who is not playing over Jaron Simmons earlier this year.
So never doubt the... I mean, who doubts that? Nobody doubts that.
The Beilein point guard effect.
Well, just the Beilein development effect.
I mean, that too. But especially with point guards.
Anybody who is at Michigan for 4 years is going to be the maximum they'll ever be as a basketball player. I mean, not the maximum. They will be the most progress they can make in 4 years.
Yeah. And
how about that? And when next year, when they lose at some stupid conference tourney played in a ballroom in Atlantis... We're not going to do this again. We're not going to freak out Michigan basketball Twitter. We're just going to be like, well, that is unfortunate, but I look forward to the improvement that is undoubtedly coming next year. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to get in anyone's mentions. We're just going to be like, that was unfortunate. I hope it doesn't happen again, and it probably will not.
Amen.
We're totally going to do this next year. Except that
every year,
you know, I don't want to talk about next year too much, but like this looks like they can just keep it rolling.
Yeah, no, that is a roster setup which given where the team is right now, that's a roster setup where you're going to be ranked pretty high in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, because you're going to lose Marr, but I think you have a fairly ready-made replacement in Poole.
Yeah,
you're going to lose Duncan Robinson. But you expect Livers to make a step forward.
Yeah, and you're also bringing in Ignas Brazdeikis and Brandon Johns.
Yeah, so you've
got some guys who can play the four.
And then you're going to get some more development from Matthews. You're going to get some more development from Simpson. And even if Wagner leaves...
Teske looked pretty good today.
What did Teske just do? And it's not that he looked pretty good today. It's the second half of the season, like that stretch in the Maryland game where he was affecting every shot anywhere near the basket. Like,
no, I mean, the fact that Michigan has a top six defense with Mo Wagner as their starting center who gets the bulk of the minutes is unfreaking believable. And they'll be better than that if Teske's the full-time center next year.
Yeah, and their three best defensive players are Z, Matthews, Teske.
Yes.
And they all come back.
And Poole's got a lot of defensive upside, even though he tends to fall asleep.
Well, I mean...
But he athletically... I mean, he's a freshman, and athletically, he is there.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago, Mar was getting blown by all the time.
Yeah, so. Mar was a rough perimeter defender for a while.
Yeah.
Even for long stretches last year. And now, I mean, Duncan Robinson's a freaking decent defender now. I don't...
Yeah, you're upgrading your athleticism. I think you're going to be more experienced overall despite a couple of losses. And
you're going to have probably a better scoring option at the backup point guard, which is important for Michigan.
Yeah, no question Michigan. About that, yeah.
Because Julius is... He's a fit. He is a fit.
Yeah,
you've got the last guy in that class, Adrian Nunez, is a guy who can come in and potentially be an instant impact guy because he is a dead-eye shooter.
Yeah, and I was reading UM Hoops, and they had an update on him, and he's shooting 40% from three on a ton of volume.
Yeah,
and there's
he shoots off the... I mean, he is a gunner.
Yeah, he shoots off the bounce.
At the high school level.
He's got a step back. He's a guy who will get it up in various ways. Like, he's not a Steph-alike because he's not a point guard, but he's one of those kind of modern three-point shooters who can get it off in a flash. So, looking pretty good.
And meanwhile, we might make a Final Four.
Yeah. And I promise that even if Michigan has a very disappointing tournament, nothing will wipe the smile off my face about this year.
Yeah, I mean, this was just...
I mean, John Beilein has...
To see where they were a couple months ago and see where they are. It's two completely different basketball teams. They've probably been like four very distinct iterations of this team as they've gone through this season. And this one is outrageously good.
The Xavier Simpson murders the world one is the best.
Yeah. I mean, who could have possibly guessed, but... Except for me, a little bit.
All right. You know what? We're kicking you off this podcast. You're done for the rest of this podcast.
It was worth it.
We're done. All right. We got to talk about hockey, but Ace is done.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more.
UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
There's a war going on outside, no man is safe from. Could run, but you can't hide forever from these streets that we done took. You walking with your head down, scared to look. You shook, cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. They never around when the beef cooks. In my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam. Now we all grown up and old and beyond the cops' control. They better have the riot gear ready, trying to back me and get rock steady. By the Mac one double, I touch you and leave you with not much to go home with. My skin is thick, cause I'll be up in the mix of action. If I'm not at home, puffin' live, relaxing. New York got a nigga depressed, so I wear a slug proof underneath my guest. God bless.
Welcome to Ace's Hockey Podcast with our special guest, Dave Nasternak.
Hi.
We've excised Ace entirely this time.
He's probably busy.
He's probably drunk. Anyway.
Well.
The hockey team also punched their ticket this weekend. So this was a very productive weekend all around. They didn't do it like I expected them to do it.
No. First game was a little shaky.
A little shaky. The first game was the worst game I saw them play all year, 5-on-5. And they get like 4 power play goals. But they get outshot. I think 2-1. They gave up like 52 shots.
Corsi was like 68-28 or something like
that. It was terrible. And it kind of reminded me of last year, but Michigan scored a bunch of goals and they managed to pull that out. And then the next night was much more even. I think Michigan deserved to win that game.
Yes.
You know, they get out to a 6-3 lead, and then, of course, the penalty kill comes back to bite them. And the interesting thing about Wisconsin is how aggressive they are on the forecheck. And I think that really caught Michigan off guard somehow, because, you know, they've played this team 4 times, but they look like they had never like gone up against a team that was going to get after them so hard in the offensive zone.
Well, it was bad on Friday, and part of that I think was because Boca was out, and he's probably one of their 2 best puck moving defensemen.
Yeah, with Hughes.
After Hughes, obviously. So when they didn't have him, and then you have kind of a bunch of other guys who you kind of get a little nervous when they're just kind of on the puck in the defensive end, they're not really going to get a lot of breakouts. And Wisconsin was forechecking 3 guys sometimes,
yeah,
which seems like a lot. It's like an odd man rush waiting to happen if you get caught.
Mm-hmm.
But Michigan just didn't have, without Boca, like they didn't have the second guy to really be able to break that.
But their power play was clicking, and the goals that they scored were not at all fluky. I mean, there was a cross crease pass that got dunked into the net, and we did see kind of that high risk, high reward on the first goal on Friday, where one defenseman is trying to get to a puck and it gets past him, and Michigan gets a 2-on-1 opportunity that Marody passes to Calderon and he buries. So it was pretty hairy on Friday. I was listening to Mel after the game, and Mel wasn't sugarcoating anything. He was just like, we didn't deserve to win this game, and if we don't play a lot better, we're going to get knocked out of this tournament. And they did play better. And I think the key thing is, you know, you get to that first intermission on Saturday, and shots are something like 6-5.
Yeah.
And that's Michigan's game this year. You know, they don't have the raw talent to go out there and have like 20 shot periods. And so you got to keep the other guy from having a 20 shot period. And Michigan accomplished that. They got the prettiest goal of the year on a 4-on-1 opportunity that Quinn Hughes helped create by attacking a guy in the zone and getting the puck off of him and then getting a great outlet pass. And then you had a tic-tac-toe play between fourth line. It was Nico Perikos.
Perikos hit Ciccone, went back to him, and then he crossed it to Raby.
And Raby dunks it in the net, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah. No, that was, I, there were some reactions up in the press box.
I mean, Perikos is a guy who's been kind of in and out of the lineup. He's a senior. He's a fourth liner. He's one of those guys who,
I think he's a walk-on.
Yeah, he's a healthy scratch most of the time. And that's one of the best goals I've seen Michigan score in years.
Yeah, I tweeted something out like, this is the video that they should show in textbooks of how to do an odd man rush.
Yeah, and like, that's, if I was Nico Perikos, I would like buy a television and strap it to my chest and just have a gif of that playing over and over again. so if you see a guy with a television strapped to him, it's Nico Perikos. But so, I mean, it was a very strange weekend. You know, I thought the goaltending was weak kind of both nights for both teams.
Both of Wisconsin's goalies have really bad save percentages.
Like
they're
around
all
900.
Yeah, and Barry, the guy who played on Saturday, was even below that.
Really?
Yeah, he was like 8-9 something. And he's probably played about a third of the games or so. So he's played some games, and I noticed that they've switched off their goalies in the past three or four series, like alternating, because one of them will get run a little bit like what's happening to Minnesota,
yeah,
where they just alternating between Robson and Shirehorn. But I think that was honestly the difference, is that like Levine was just better than either of their goalies, because they both had a lot of chances, and Levine, while giving up some bad goals,
he gave up a couple of,
but he also made some crazy saves. Maybe he was positionally, maybe he just got lucky. I mean, I don't really know, but he actually made a lot of those saves, where if you look at Barry and then Hayton from Friday, like neither one of them made that many saves just at all.
It was a fun weekend though. Like it was like, Anthony, our friend, has this theory that the NHL would be a lot better if they banned the best 90 goalies in the world. And this felt kind of like, yeah, I agree entirely with Anthony. Like, I don't know how you could do that legally, but yeah, like if you just downgrade the goaltending.
Just don't let them wear pads and see who shows up.
let's do that. So Michigan is now locked in. The pairwise predictor at College Hockey News has them at 100%. It is 100.0%, which makes me think that it's not 100%, but it rounds up to 100%. But Michigan is currently the number 8 team in the pairwise. They have an 0.1 chance of falling to 13th. And 13th is probably still good. The 13th has not been a bid steal auto bid in, since the time that I've been following college hockey. So they are in. They are very likely a 2 or 3 seed, and it doesn't really matter, because they can't be kept anywhere near home. I mean, the craziest thing about this is that Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame are all going to be like top 8 seeds if Michigan does well.
And yeah,
they all have to travel 1,000 miles, which is, but that's just my annual and constant complaint about the college hockey tourney. One thing that is nice is that the Big Ten went away from that. So Michigan, we had a fun series at Yost. It was well attended. You know, I think you're probably looking at a building that's 80 to 90% full both nights. And
Friday was a little sketchy. Saturday filled up more.
I mean, so you have one end zone that has open seats in it. And like, I thought the crowds were pretty good. I know that over the course of the series, you had more people in that building than attended the tournament last year.
Well, that probably the last few years, other than maybe like when the host team was actually playing in the final.
Yeah, and they charged $25 for tickets, which is a good price, and they got a good crowd, and people are making money. You're playing more hockey, and you get a reward for finishing the season well. So, thanks to the Big Ten for correcting their fairly obvious mistake of maintaining a neutral site tournament, and they go to Columbus next weekend.
Yeah, in an interesting one game.
Yeah,
series.
I don't like that. I think
it's a series.
It feels like a compromise because, like, Wisconsin and Ohio State use their buildings for other stuff, like high school championships. So I think that they wanted some sort of certainty that they could have for Saturday and Sunday.
Just have everybody go to Notre Dame and play 2 on Friday and the championship on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with that too, because then you have another week in the regular season that you can do something
or
with.
Or a bye week or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But
I agree. I think it should be best 2 out of 3, at least for the semis. And then I can kind of get why you want the one-off.
For the final, absolutely. Game. Yeah. The interesting thing is, I think this bodes well for Michigan in that it's only one game, because I've said before that I think that
0-4 against Ohio State this year.
Right, exactly. And I think that's just the toughest matchup because I think that they're Notre Dame with a little better offense. Mm-hmm. If Michigan is going to get out of this weekend, it's probably going to be because they win one game, not two, down in Columbus.
Yeah. And then if they do beat Ohio State, they'll probably be going to Notre Dame, and we saw what happens when they go to Notre Dame.
Maybe.
Like they play them dead even.
Yeah. I mean, they could host Penn State. The way that Penn State's been playing, they've scored a ton of goals. They always score a ton of goals, and they're kind of like a one of those roller coaster teams where they're I think their final of their game on Saturday was like 6-5 or 7-6 or something like that. Very similar to Michigan. So,
And they've basically played themselves in by winning four straight against Minnesota.
All in State College.
All of them in State College, but still, you win four straight against Minnesota. Like, College Hockey News has them at 99.5%, and they're also like a team that like can't, like they have a 1% chance to drop to 14. They have a 5% chance to drop to 13. So you're going to see Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Minnesota in all likelihood.
Is Minnesota in too?
Yeah, I mean, they're 13th right now, but 13th is safe.
Yeah.
So, and they're done. So nothing bad can happen to them, and all the teams around them are going to be playing each other.
It's funny because we talked the last few years about how bad the Big Ten is. And
well,
this year it's I'm not saying that it wasn't. I'm saying that it's crazy because now...
Well, you added Notre Dame, and that's a big step in itself. You know, Michigan replaces their coach, and obviously Mel's a really good coach. And then Penn State, I think, was always kind of on the verge of doing this. Like, they've looked really good, and they're upbeat. They are high tempo. They put a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah.
They look like a team that's a tourney team, and they just haven't really put it together yet, but they're in.
And Wisconsin's a top half of college hockey team as well. So it's not like when you get to the bottom of the Big Ten, it's just terrible. Michigan State's not very good.
No, there's only one bad team in the league, and it's Michigan State.
And you forgot about Ohio State, who's a one seed right now. Like, they went from barely making the tournament last year and kind of being a team over the last few years where you could see them maybe getting a little bit better. They've had a couple of guys. And now, I mean, I would rather be going to South Bend next weekend than I would Columbus.
Yeah. Well, let's not end it on a downer, man.
No, I'm just trying to say that the Big Ten has gotten better, and it's gotten better by taking the teams that weren't very good and making them better teams. So now the conference as a whole is very good.
Yeah, and that's so Michigan was at 500 this season, and they were on the bubble, and now that they're five games above 500, they're in, and that was a thing that I don't think we really projected going in, is that Michigan was going to get like an old WCHA schedule bump. Which
yeah.
They have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good conference. It's good hockey. And I'm glad that we've had kind of a turnaround, because those first few years in the Big Ten were kind of lame.
Yeah, well, when you had a couple of teams that are generally pretty normally good throughout their histories not performing very well, that's going to happen. When you get back to it, this is your result.
Yep. So Michigan has punched their ticket, and unless you live in South Dakota or the East Coast, you won't be going. But Michigan's back in the tournament. First year under Mel Pearson, and a huge turnaround because they were one of the worst teams in the country last year. Got bailed out by their goaltending. Great sign for now, great sign for the future, and it's wide open. Like, if Michigan can play with Notre Dame, the number two overall seed right now, they can play with anybody. So maybe they'll get lucky.
Well, you got one shot Saturday night.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. And with apologies to Dave for sitting along with us through all of this, I hope I don't get arrested on the drive home. Thomas, I'll retire, bitch!